Queen Ida, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM on the radio. Your spot for Cajun and Zydeco music. Bon ton roulet.
When the farmer comes to town with his wagon broken down, the farmer is...
Tune in to The Dirtbag every second Wednesday of the month at 11 a.m.
Learn to grow your tasty fruits and vegetables in your home garden.
There is a monthly garden stumper, calendar of gardening events. You can even call in with your gardening questions.
That's The Dirtbag every second Wednesday, 11 to 12 a.m. That's on
K-B-O-O Portland.
Listen, laugh, learn.
The farmer is the man that feeds them all.
In San Francisco, this is Flashpoints. I'm Dennis Bernstein. Today on the show, our weekly segment, Genocide Watch, with Sam Husseini and this week, Rayard Gerard. What are they going to look at? Israelis blow themselves up and then kill over 40 Palestinians in an act of racist rage. What ceasefire? Also, immigrants' rights activists bracing for Trump military crackdowns in Los Angeles and parts south. And Angela Davis speaks out at Saturday's No Kings rally. All this and more coming up straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. This is your daily investigative news magazine. We're coming to you every weekday from 5 to 6 over the Pacifica Radio Network. That's KPFA in the Bay Area. And we are honored to have you along with us. And we begin with our weekly segment we call a Genocide Watch. It's focusing on the continuing killing fields of Gaza and the West Bank. Joining us, as he always does every Monday, is Sam Husseini. And our special guest for this segment is an old friend of the show, Rayard Gerard. We welcome both of you back to Flashpoints.
Good to be with you, Dennis.
Thanks for having me again.
Great to have you. Let me start with you, Rayard. We heard about this ceasefire, and then there was a slaughter of 40 Palestinians. How did the Israelis explain this one?
They don't really have to explain it. I think we know at this point what the Israelis want. The Israelis want every Palestinian dead. The Israelis want every Palestinian to be kicked out of their homes in Gaza. And the fact that they did not get to throw Palestinians in the sea or in the desert of Sinai is an inconvenient. That does not fit well with this Israeli government and most of the Israeli public, unfortunately. So it's killing more Palestinians is definitely fits into that framework and that appetite for more death and destruction.
Yes, killing by the dozen. They're masters at that. That is the voice of Rayad Jarar. He is, he works for, he's the director, the advocacy director for the group Dawn that was founded by slain writer Jamal Khashoggi. Also joining us is our own Sam Husseini. Sam, welcome back to Flashpoints. You want to pick up where Rayad left off? What ceasefire, I'm asking?
Yeah, thank you, Dennis. Yeah, I mean, I'm not even sure that rage explains Israel's actions. I think it's more fishing for pretext, at least at the top governmental level. You apparently had, Israeli soldiers blow themselves up, basically running over their own ordnance in Rafah, where they're, Hamas, in all likelihood, related fighters aren't there, but they want a pretext to commit carnage. And this wasn't the only incident. I don't think a day has gone by where Israel hasn't slaughtered some Palestinians. Now, it's more typically been since the October 10th ceasefire. So-called ceasefire. It's been more in the range of 10 or so a day rather than the 100 or so a day that we were seeing. But it certainly flared up after this incident. There were others, and we are seeing a fair amount of violence, including settler violence. There was one brutal attack by a settler on an elderly Palestinian woman, just assaulting her on the head on the West Bank. So there's a large part of continued violence, and it's not clear to me if there's some daylight here between the U.S. government and the Israeli government. The U.S. government wants to get a resolution apparently through the UN, or at least its European allies do, to do what they're calling a stabilization force, what could be a sort of multilateral occupation force of several of the countries that Trump featured in his extravaganza from Sharm el Sheikh recently. Israel, and so Israel, the U.S. government is sort of saying, cool it. Let's dominate the situation, and we need you to do a little bit less killing in the short term. And it's not clear if Israel can necessarily help itself in order to basically help make that happen. So it's not clear to me if there is some daylight between the two factions, which have been the sort of co-producers of this genocide the last 2 years.
And what say you, Rayad, about the U.S. sort of roadway to genocide? Do you suppose that they were a part of this, giving the go-ahead? I mean, how could we doubt it?
Listen, the United States has been a partner in crime from day one, and this genocide would have not happened without U.S. logistical support and political support. Most of the deaths in Gaza happened because of U.S.-made bombs and because of U.S.-backed vetoes in the United Nations Security Council. So the U.S. is definitely a partner in crime, and the U.S. government has blood on its hands when it comes to the genocide in Gaza. I personally don't think that this ceasefire agreement came because Trump was nice or Netanyahu became nice. They were dealing with a very serious international crisis. And that crisis kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I mean, we saw all the pressure going on from inside Israel and the United States and from other countries in Europe, in the Arab world, in Southeast Asia, Australia. The entire world was revolting against this U.S.-Israeli genocide. I think that is what got us to this moment, and I think that's an important moment to think about, Dennis, because we got here because of what everyone on this call, all of your audiences, everyone around the world has done for the last 2 years. Every call made a difference. Every protest made a difference. Every boycott made a difference. Every action that we did. And now is not the time to stop. Now is the time to continue our pressure, because although the daily killing has been paused, the Israeli-American death machine continues to exist in the same way. The same racist foundation, the same lethal weapons are still being shipped to Israel. So I would say, like, we have to continue the pressure. This is not a time to let go and go back home and celebrate the end of genocide. The actual end of injustice will happen when Israel's apartheid and occupation will end, and that will not happen without us continuing our pressure the same way that we did in the last 2 years. We have to continue the same pressure to isolate Israel and pressure the international community to do the right thing until Israel's apartheid is over.
And not to put a fine point on this, but the weapons flows to Israel have not ceased. Have they ceased for one day, or are we still sending the same big bombs?
Well, much bigger and much worse. You know, as we speak, there are more and more and more shipments of weapons that are going to Israel. More weapon approved, billions of dollars approved by this administration, the Trump administration, that tries to portray itself as some sort of a broker of peace, a potential recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize. You know, this is the administration that has sent tens of billions of dollars. His obsession with
that. I'm sorry.
Very funny.
It's bizarre.
No, it's just like, it's unbelievable. But like, when you think about it, like, tens of billions of dollars worth of weapons were authorized and approved by this administration alone, let alone the previous criminal administration, which, as I spoke on your show before, Dennis, my organization, Dawn, has requested that the International Criminal Court take action against former President Biden and the top officials of the Biden administration, because they should be charged with aiding and abetting the genocide that was committed in Gaza. So, I mean, like, this administration and the previous administration, the United States is not a part of the solution. And that's why, you know, as I said, the moment we're living now, it doesn't come from Trump showing up on his white horse to save the day. The moment we're going through is a moment of international solidarity and pressure that has led to a point that made this genocide unsustainable.
And of course, you could bet that his horse is white. Go on, Sam. Your take, by the way, I want you to also address the power of public opinion in this context. Go on.
Yeah, no, I think public opinion has been a tremendous force, and we've certainly seen an awakening in public opinion. The problem is that there can be such a gap between public opinion and even protest and concrete action that actually helps change policy. When you have a political system, as we do in the United States, that's so unresponsive, that AIPAC, you know, floods Congress with money, and obviously Trump with Adelson, who he thanked, you know, profusely when he spoke at the Knesset and so on. But I'd like to point out, you know, three particular things that as Rod was saying, helped bring us to this point recently, and I think sort of forced this ceasefire. One is Colombia moving on Uniting for Peace, or saying that they would do so. They still haven't put in a resolution to use the General Assembly's Uniting for Peace mechanism to effectively override the U.S. Veto.
Putting that on the table, I think, is a tremendous threat to the U.S. dominance on Palestine and more generally. It's a way for the global South, of Latin America and Africa and Asia and some sectors of Europe, to move against the U.S. empire. The flotilla,
it got Trump's attention, didn't it? It got Trump's attention.
Right, and we may well be seeing an acceleration of attacks on Colombia, as well as, you know, Venezuela, and, you know, an effective rigging of the electoral process in Bolivia. I think at least one of the motivations for some of those moves has been that those three countries have been so, in the lead in taking some meaningful stand on Palestine. So, yeah, I think absolutely. And the flotilla, I think, was a major factor. You had people from 45 countries, and they wanted to, not let that coalition, coalesce in terms of making public opinion real and tangible. So I think that part of what's happening here is that they're going back to the tool shed and re-gearing their war machine. I think Rod is absolutely right that now is not any time to, you know, declare victory or something. You have, we touched on this before, Dennis, Larry Ellison taking over CBS, TikTok, yes, eyeing CNN, and so on. So a lot of the things that helped wake up people, especially young people, aren't going to be there the next time the war machine, you know, goes into complete, accelerated genocide mode, as opposed to, a lower level of genocide mode. And they're trying to set up this system where they get Arab dictatorships and some European states to do this stabilization force and to further hijack the UN process and to prevent a meaningful coalescence with Uniting for Peace or other mechanisms at the UN to properly reflect global opinion.
You're listening to Genocide Watch on Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We do this every Monday at the top of the hour. That's the voice of Sam Husseini. Also joining us is Rod Giraud. And Rod, I want you to take a good shot at, we're all watching the Gaza Strip, but, you know, we know that the West Bank is, 7-8 times the size of Gaza, and the Israelis are unrelenting, the settler movement particularly there. So please remind us what's happening on the other side of that so-called piece of land contested.
Listen, before I tell you about what's going on in the West Bank, because we actually, Don issued a very grim press release last week about a milestone that we crossed there. But before I say this, I do want to say that the Israeli apartheid death machine, it targets all Palestinians around the world in different ways. And there are Palestinians in Gaza who are subjected to this brutal genocide. There are Palestinians in the West Bank. There are Palestinians in historic Palestine in 1948, the current border of the state of Israel, Palestinian citizens of Israel who constitute 20% of the population are also under daily attack to erase their identity. And half of us, Dennis, half of the Palestinian population on planet Earth are, like me, Palestinians in the diaspora. We are also under daily attack to erase our identity and our existence. And make sure that we are not a part of this big body called Palestinians. With Palestinians in the West Bank, what happened last week is that we issued a comment or a press statement about the fact that Israel has killed 1,001 Palestinians since October 7. So in 2 years, Israel has killed 1,001 Palestinians in the West Bank. That is such a huge number, and that's not a number that we calculated. That's a number that is according to the UN. According to UN calculations, you know, about at least half of these 1,001 Palestinians who have been killed are either children or 100% unarmed. So you're not talking about isolated incidents here. You're talking about a system of a destruction and death and executions everywhere, you know? Like, the question that I have always been asking in, like, in the last couple of years is, when Israel and pro-Israel and pro-genocide groups say we have to do this in Gaza because of October 7th and because of Hamas, what about the West Bank? Was there an October 7th in the West Bank? Was there a Hamas in the West Bank? There was nothing. These are excuses that are used to push a preset agenda, and the agenda is for the destruction and erasure of the Palestinian identity and existence, whether it was in Gaza, the West Bank, 48, or the diaspora. So unfortunately, what we see in the West Bank is complete destruction of entire neighborhoods and camps. Like Jenin, my hometown, where my father was born, my grandfather was born, there was an almost complete destruction of the camp of Jenin. The camp, main camp of Palestinian refugees in Tul Karim, was also destroyed. Aerial bombardment, daily attacks, destruction of homes, demolitions, prevention of building new homes, attacks by settlers on agricultural land. It is a systemic daily event. And honestly, I think that everything that we're seeing in Gaza, and the attention, and asking the International Criminal Court to step in to hold Israeli officials accountable for their crimes in Gaza, that should extend to other crimes committed by Israel in the West Bank and elsewhere, because Israeli crimes are not limited to Gaza.
Wow. And Sam, final comments today. Your thoughts?
Yeah, just Rod made very brief allusion to Palestinians inside the state of Israel. And they've been, you know, so invisible in this equation because they are under a unique sort of threat, that if they speak up too much, that, you know, they're extremely vulnerable to Israeli reprisal. We saw one of the Palestinian members of the Knesset try to speak up during Trump's speech and got hauled away. So that's, you know, part of the voice of Palestinians. I mean, Israel is seeking to fracture and fracture and fracture Palestinians and Palestinian. The latest thing from Kushner is that, there are distinct cultures between Gaza and the West Bank to try to, you know, fracture Palestinians into, you know, Bantustans, which is kind of rich, because the general Zionist line is that, you know, Palestinians are just another set of Arabs. and now they've totally reversed their propaganda line. I think it is important to be mindful of obviously Gaza has borne the brunt of this accelerated genocide, but there are several factions, several portions of Palestinians that are subjugated in various ways.
Well, I want to thank both of you. Riyad, by the way, how do people get in touch with you? How do they follow Dawn, the organization that you work with?
I mean, we're on social media. I encourage folks to follow us. It's DAWN, Dawn, and we're on all social media. Our website is dawnmena.org, DAWNMENA, that stands for Middle East and North Africa, .org, so dawnmena.org. You can sign up for our newsletter and find all of our social media handles there as well.
All right. Well, we thank both of you for taking the time out to help enlighten us on a situation that we consider a genocide still in motion. Both of you, please stay safe and come back and visit again soon. We'd love to hear from you.
Thank you, Dennis.
You're absolutely welcome. We do Genocide Watch every Monday, and we're going to keep a microscopic eye on what's going on in the genocide on the Middle East. You are listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. I was honored to be with Miguel Gabriela Molina and the crew, Tara Tarabji, to cover the march over the weekend. Unfortunately, we had to end at 4 o'clock. And Angela Davis spoke at 4:02. So we wanted to give you Angela Davis speaking at the No Kings March and gathering over the weekend. So listen to this extraordinary little talk.
So now I'm so honored to bring our next guest to the stage. And you know who it is? It's Dr. Angela Davis. Yeah. As I'm sure you know, Angela Davis is an educator, an organizer, and she is a visionary. She is known internationally for her work to combat all forms of oppression in the U.S. and abroad. She's an organizer who has provided leadership to the Black Liberation, the feminists, the queer, and the prison abolitionist movements. Woo! She's amazing. Yeah, let's get some whoops for that. She's been in this movement for more than 50 years. Are you all going to be here in 50 years fighting? Yeah. So let's give a warm welcome for Dr. Angela Davis.
You're tuned in to KPFA, and this is your Flash Onda crew. We are broadcasting live from the Civic Center. I'm Tara Drabji here with Dennis Bernstein, Falcon, Franklin Sterling, Miguel Gavilan Molina with Jay at the controls. Thanks so much.
Good afternoon, San Francisco. You are a beautiful sight, and I don't think I can imagine a more beautiful sight than all of us gathered here in San Francisco this afternoon, and all over California, and all over the U.S. to say we actively refuse to be complicit with the illegal actions of the U.S. government. In our magnificent multiplicity, we say no. 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 We refuse to be in complicity with fascism. We are people of all racial backgrounds. We are people of all genders. And this includes Black trans women. And let me say, Miss Majors, you are here in spirit with us this afternoon. We are workers. We are unionized workers. Thank you, Nurses United and the California Nurses Association. And we are union organizers. We are teachers. And we are domestic workers. We are all citizens of the world. Regardless of whether we have documents. We are people who have been in prisons, jails, detention facilities, and many remain incarcerated but are here with us in spirit. And let us not forget those who would be here but for the presence of ICE. And so all of us whoever we are people who believe in freedom. People who believe in freedom. And we who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes. Trump, I hate even mentioning his name. He may have won the last election, but let us remember that more people did not vote for him than actually cast their vote for him in the election. He would not have won if not for the support of the billionaire capitalists. Elon Musk and the major tech capitalists genuflected before power and decided to stand with Trump, authoritarianism, and with all of those who are on the wrong side of history. So we are here to say that we want ICE and the National Guard out of our community. We stand in solidarity with undocumented immigrants. We are all citizens of the world, whether we have papers or not. And we are here to say that we are in solidarity with the Palestinian people. And that a ceasefire is not enough. We want an end to the ongoing violence of the Israeli occupation. We want freedom and self-determination in Gaza and the West Bank. And so we are here to say no to racism. And no to anti-Semitism. And no to the weaponization of anti-Semitism to attack those who stand against genocide. We stand for reproductive justice, the right to abortion, reproductive care, trans justice, and the right to resources for the children we choose to welcome into our lives. And we stand with the people of Haiti and the people of Sudan and the people of Congo and every other place on the planet where there is a fight against capitalism, against empire, and against settler colonialism. We stand with those who support science, public education, and free universities. And we want to join the rest of the planet in combating the dangers of climate change. The dangers of climate change for human as well as non-human animals. And finally, we stand with abolitionists and freedom fighters of the world. And with everyone who not only seeks to dismantle unjust systems, but who is imagining and actively creating new and habitable futures. Free Palestine! Thank you.
Dr. Angela Davis speaking at No Kings over the weekend. Estimates went up to 140,000. Our own Free Will and Frank was right in the middle of all of it, reporting through the day, jumping over major technical difficulties to bring you a signal. But we were delighted to be there, to be live there. We appreciate management's support in that, and we will obviously continue to cover this movement and what goes on as people stand against emerging fascism. That is really where Trump seems to be going. Again, you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to speak with Juan Jose Gutierrez and our own Miguel Gavala Molina about what is going on down south and what Trump has in store for the troops in Southern Cal and parts south. Stay with us. And you are listening to Flashpoints. Joining us, we're proud to have him, is Juan Jose Gutierrez. Juan Jose Gutierrez has worked on immigration issues for many years. He's executive director at Vamos Unidos USA and director of Latino Movement USA. Welcome back, Juan. Also joining us is our own Miguel Gavala Molina. Welcome, Miguel. And great to be able to continue this dialogue. Juan Jose, what's the word down in L.A.? How are people preparing? Because clearly Trump has it out for California. He probably has a special vengeance for Southern Cal. Talk to us about the plans and what we should be thinking about.
Well, I think that what is clear now is that we're not staring at the very scary possibility that we will soon see an all-out effort to establish a police state in the very United States of America. But moreover, I think, a fascist regime who's made a decision that now that they have political power, they do not want to give it up. Regardless of the rules as they are in our democracy. And so that's a very serious reality that we're going to have to begin to address. And what makes me hopeful that when everything is said and done, we will be able to safeguard our democracy is the fact that across the board, respected voices, organizations, institutions, they're all converging in using very direct and clear language about the political challenges that we can have no more doubt we're already confronting and right in the middle of, and that is that we're basically dealing with a fascist regime. And if we're going to have any hope of having successful elections November of 2026, we better get on this idea that we're going to have to do much more organizing and mobilizing. We're going to have to devise a clear political agenda. We're going to have to ID the domestic issues much more clear so that we can motivate more and more people to join the ongoing organizing and mobilizing effort to stop and ultimately remove the Donald Trump political regime. That's my take. I think that the No Kings March 2 left no doubt in everybody's mind that as impressive as mobilizing 7 million people, I know that in the case of L.A., we still have a very great challenge in bringing organized labor in force. We need to work to overcome the fear of the immigrant community that hasn't stepped forward yet. It is their children that are doing that. And I'm going to give you some data that should make us all think that we have to take what's going on presently in our country a lot more seriously. Since June 6th of this year, which is not a long time, there's an organization called ProPublica, and they published a report where they documented that more than 170 U.S. citizens have been detained in raids and protests for allegedly assaulting officers or interfering with immigration enforcement. And more than 20 citizens reported being detained for more than a day without being able to call their loved ones or a lawyer. You know, and so this means that Americans are being dragged, knocked down, beaten, tased, and shot by immigration agents. They've had their knees placed on American citizens' necks. American citizens have been held in the rain in their underwear, and at least three women, American citizens, were pregnant when agents detained them. So we're confronting a very, very serious situation. Thank God the U.S. citizens of Latino origin are doing the hard, you know, the heavy lift, the hard work, the heavy lifting on behalf of their communities. But I think it's becoming clear that this is an all-out assault against the American people and our institutions of government in a way that we have not witnessed, at least in my lifetime. And so we're all very concerned, and that's why we're redoubling the efforts at doing everything we can to make it clear to the American people that we need to wake up. And I was very happy about what happened over the weekend, because as I contemplated thousands upon thousands of people that came out onto the streets in the city of Los Angeles, you know, if I had to describe it in some way, you know, to communicate a sense of what I felt, I saw, and this gave me a lot of hope and courage, that the American people are waking up. And it's only a matter of time when organized labor and the democratic, institutions of religion, you know, the Catholic Church, et cetera, they come in and they stop holding back the bases. I think that we're going to have what is going to be required to finally put an end to what we thought that we have put an end to 80 years ago,
yes.
And that is international fascism. Obviously, we know today that that was not the case. It's kind of hard to believe that 80 years from the end of World War II, at a cost of more than 80 million lives in America, which was part of the Allied forces, we are now having to confront a government who's basically, you know, raising the banner of international fascism in the very heart of the United States. That cannot be. We all need to be concerned about that, and we have to redouble our commitment to organize and do all we can wherever we are, and give it our all. That's the only path that I can see, to succeed in overcoming.
And that's and let me tell people regime. That's the voice of Juan Jose Gutierrez. Juan Jose Gutierrez is a friend of this show. He has worked in immigration issues for many years. We're running out of time, but before I give you over to Gavilan, we've seen children, young children, hand tied and dragged away in absolute terror. I mean, you talk about images of Nazism. When we did reporting on Chile, I've been through all those countries, Argentina. We saw this kind of death squad activity and young, very young children, because the point is send a message to the very young, put the terror into the young and restrain them that way.
Yes. I mean, look what happened on Thursday, October the 16th, in the city of Oxnard, where community activist Leo Martinez, a U.S. citizen of Mexican parents, who's built this organization called VC Defensa. VC stands for Ventura County Defensa. And what they've been doing is following immigration agents to try and prevent, to the extent possible, the raids, arrests, and so on of presumed undocumented persons. And he himself was rammed. His pickup truck was struck by a van driven by federal immigration agents on the streets of Oxnard. Not yes. once, but twice. And he was arrested and detained for nearly 7 hours. And good thing the community mobilized and put a lot of pressure on immigration agents so that he could be released. And he was released, right? But he was warned that the government, he was released without charges, but he was warned that the government has up to 2 years to still press criminal charges of a very serious nature against them. And, yes. So that's why the figure that I gave about the nearly 200 known U.S. citizens of Latino origin that have been detained, beaten, et cetera, is very, very important. It's yes. not just undocumented persons. It's not just children. It's everybody, right? Citizen, undocumented person, lawful resident, et cetera. So, I thank you very much for this opportunity to state what I'm saying. We need to do more of this and follow.
We're absolutely delighted to have you.
Before the situation gets any better, it's going to get a lot worse.
We appreciate having you. And let me bring in your friend Miguel Gavilan Molina, who has a question for you.
Thank you, Juan Jose, for being with us. My question is, people have faith in democracy and so forth and the democratic process. Unfortunately, the Democrats are Demopublicans. It was Obama that set up the detention camps and, grabbing families and jailing them on the border. And it was, Bill Clinton, another Democrat, that started Gatekeeper, that militarized the California U.S.-Mexican border. So there's no faith in the Democratic Party. But recently, the firing of federal immigration court judges here in California, and of course, the executive order, which was illegal, unconstitutional, it happened. My big concern now is soon the U.S. Supreme.
Hello?
Okay, Juan Jose, we lost Gavilan. We've been having a lot of problem with the lines here and there. I think you have the gist of what he was saying, that those in power with reputations for abuse are expanding their operations and what to do about that.
Well, my position is that although I agree with Miguel Gavilan Molina in his description of what happened with past Democratic Party administrations, President Barack Obama and before him Bill Clinton, and all the anti-immigrant work that they did to create an environment in which now Donald Trump comes and is doing what he's doing, using immigration as one of the big motivators to mobilize the base that took up to, you know, to take power for the second time. You know, I think that at this point in time, while acknowledging that all that is true, I think that we need to aim, if we're going to be serious about stopping this fascist organization in power, you know, we're going to have to build like a broad, in my view at least, you know, the broadest front possible.
Yes.
And we need to win people from every segment of American society, including the Democratic Party and people in positions of authority within the party. We all need to come together, humble ourselves a little bit, because we all know that we don't like certain individuals, certain organizations, etc. But at this point in time, the danger to all of the American people is such that unless and until we develop the capacity to bring together the largest possible congregation of American people who can actively oppose in the consolidation of this fascist regime, we might not succeed. And that's worse than having Democrats that we may not all like a whole lot, but who are needed to join us in this effort to overcome what's going on right now. And without any doubt, it's going to get, like I said earlier, a lot worse before it gets better.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Obviously, we have to expand the movement. That's wise counsel. We always get wise counsel from you, Juan Jose Gutierrez, and it's always a privilege to have you with us. And Miguel and I appreciate your presence and all the incredible work you've done over many years. We hope we can keep this dialogue going and keep our audience informed with your help.
Thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate it. And I'll always make myself available to participate in this very, very important conversation that we're having with people that follow you on KPFI. Thank you very much.
We are grateful. We are grateful. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're going to take a short break, and we're going to go back to Palestine. And if you've been listening to this show over the last year or so, you know that poet, translator, visionary, child psychotherapist Anita Burroughs has written a powerful poem, not just a powerful poem for every day of the genocide. And we are delighted to welcome back to these airwaves Anita Burroughs for some poems based on the latest tragedy. Anita, we thought there was a truce, but what we saw yesterday and today was a slaughter of over 40 people, not to mention all the bombings that resumed. The Israelis say they're going to go back to peace, but they killed a lot of people to do it. Why don't you read a little bit for us? Take a few minutes and read us a few poems.
Exactly. Yes, thank you. Thank you, Dennis. Well, this is about one of the families who were slaughtered in the last few days during the so-called ceasefire. As Rafat al-Arir said, we cease, they fire. So this is day 745. This is the one I wrote today. The Abu Shaban family. They were going home. They'd left when they were told to. They were together. They had survived. They thought they had survived, that now the bombings would cease, that now they could start to rebuild, to redeem what was left of their home from mountains of waste, from the stench of death and sewage, from 2 years of loss, grief, horror. They were going home in a van that held them all members of one family. Suddenly, a familiar sound. Suddenly, shots, explosions. Everyone in the car, children, parents, everyone, suddenly dead. Two children's bodies, too shattered, too fragmented to be found. Somewhere mixed with the rubble. Somewhere their blood left to seep into the ravaged earth. Bodies that moments ago were whole, children who had been laughing, teasing each other, playing, some who had been looking silently out at the road, the ruins. Now they are part of the ruins. Now they will never reach their home. Now they are gone to feed the statistics.
That's Anita Barrows. And feel free to give us a couple. Anita has been writing poems every day of this genocide, and we've been trying to give you... I'm a firm believer that information comes to you in many different ways, and it certainly comes to us in terms of the suffering. It comes to us very clearly through Anita's poems. By the way, she's a skillful translator of Rilke and was an extraordinary partner in those translations with the late Joanna Macy. Welcome, Anita. Read us a couple.
Thank you. This is from yesterday, day 744, from a photograph. What should nourish you could become your death. The food you might eat, if food is delivered, could find in your stick-like body no way to be digested. Your body has learned starvation. Now it cannot unlearn it. Now it has forgotten what it was like to eat fruit, meat, vegetables. You stand, your back to the photographer, against a wall, not strong enough anymore to hold yourself up. Your spine like a stack of chips, shoulder blades like hangers bent into hooks. You're five. Once you ran with your friends, laughed, stuffed warm bread into your mouth with chubby hands. Once. Can you remember? Can your body ever be taught again to remember? That's part of the tragedy of you know, even allowing food in now after months of starvation. People's bodies can't digest what's being given. Yes. They need special medications which are not being delivered. This is day 743, and this was inspired by a report by Dunya Abu Sita, who is from Gaza. She's a kindergarten teacher. She did an interview with the Electronic Intifada about 10 days ago. A woman walks for miles, pushing her husband in a wheelchair over the rubble. He has been wounded and cannot walk. She is 7 months pregnant with twins. She pushes, pushes. The rubble is hard to cross. There are soldiers and tanks on either side. Where are they going? Where is there to go? She begins to feel pains, weakness. She has to sit down on the hard ground. She sits. Her husband sits in the wheelchair beside her. The pains come rhythmically. She realizes she's in labor. Labor! Soldiers and tanks on either side. The soldiers watch, their guns pointed. She is lying down now, rubble pressing into her back. More pains. Then one baby's head crowns. She pulls him out of her body with her own hands. He is so small. Now the other twin crowns, and she pulls this one out as well. Her husband bends from his wheelchair. There is blood all around her. He calls out for help, and there is none. No one around but the soldiers. And now the babies are crying, and now they are silent, both of them silent. Their mother sits up, takes them into her arms. They were warm when they emerged, and now their tiny bodies are growing cold. She is still bleeding. Her husband from his wheelchair can do nothing. The babies have died in the place they were born. Empty sky overhead.
Wow. You're listening to Flashpoints.
These are true stories. What you said about reporting is absolutely the case. They're true stories just worked into poems. Do we have time for one more?
We have 2 minutes left. Could you say just a word about your students, and then maybe you can end with a poem? or your students. Yeah. I know you. I want people to know that you are teaching through this genocide. You have students in Gaza, young students who are creating extraordinary works of poetry.
Yes, I do. I have amazing students, one in Gaza City whose family decided not to leave, even though they're in the Zaytun neighborhood. The Zaytun neighborhood was heavily bombed, and they decided that it wasn't worth it to go anywhere because what happened to that family of 11 people could happen to them on the way to wherever. So they stayed. Her name is Takwa. I've read some of her poems on the air. She is still alive. She is working like crazy. They're, you know, they're encouraged by the thought of a ceasefire and by the fact that some food deliveries are getting in, even though it's, you know, less than half of what was promised. I think everybody in Gaza is so weary of what's been going on for 2 years that any small respite is a relief for them. And my all three of my students, one whose wife is expecting a baby in a few weeks, have expressed joy and relief, and I haven't heard from them in the last 2 days since things have really escalated. And in fact, right after this show, I'm going to write to Takwa because I think she tried to call me while I was on the air.
Yes. And well, here's what we're going to do, Anita, because we're out of time. We're going to invite you back soon. We want to bring you back with your student or students, and we'll do a group reading.
Wonderful. I love that.
Tell that story. We thank you. Sorry we didn't have the time. That's Anita Barrows. She is a poet, psychotherapist for children, writing a poem every day of this genocide. Poetry with information we depend on, like we do the news, except it sort of goes a little bit deeper usually. Stay with us.
This is KBOO Portland, listener-powered, non-corporate community radio.
At KBOO, we accept many kinds of vehicle donations. We accept fuzzy vans, broken cars, zippy scooters, seaworthy boats, well-worn farm equipment, family-sized SUVs, old jet skis, and more.